The following is a Feltnout production. To find out more, visit feltnout.co.uk.
Hello, hiya. Welcome to What's It Like? I'm Lee Kyle, here from Feltnout Productions. We'll get on to that later. I want to say thank you for listening. This is episode 2. Thank you for listening especially and sharing episode 1. Had some lovely feedback on it, and that's always nice because, frankly, a lot of people don't like a lot of stuff I do. They're fools. So that was with Dawn Bowman from Grave Crisis. This one's also a relatively heavy episode, if very different, with Catherine Scott. Now, Catherine Scott is a comedian, playwright, you know, that sort of thing, up here in beautiful the northeast of England. Now, what this podcast is a podcast about specific aspects of people's life. So it's not a career retrospective of what Catherine does. What it is focusing on one thing, and that is diabetes. Catherine is diabetic, and we're talking about that. Now, my knowledge of diabetes comes basically from one lass in my school and also Catherine, who I know, but I've only dealt with it on a surface level, and I don't think I quite appreciated how just how much it dominates a person's life. And I also didn't realise quite how life-threatening it still can be, but absolutely was until relatively recently. So it's very interesting. Have a listen. Well, you are. It's coming soon. If you like it, join our Patreon at patreon.com/feltnout, in which you will get this a week earlier than everybody else, as well as loads of other podcasts, and you get bonus content from each podcast. So if you're listening to this and not on the Patreon, that's there now. Plenty more chat. There's loads of stuff. There's also podcasts from the likes of Gavin Webster, Sammy Dobson. They're already up. There's ones from Simon and Chris Donald talking about the history of Viz Comic, which they came up with. There's lots of different things for comedy fans throughout the Northeast to appreciate, but also comedy fans from everywhere. You know, we're not just being all, aren't we dead canny, us Geordies, us. I have to say, though, that the quality on some of this podcast, sound-wise, isn't ideal. It was recorded over Zoom with Catherine because she's got 2 kids, and, you know, sometimes plans change, but it's absolutely very listenable. I hope you enjoy it. Do join the Patreon. You get loads of stuff. You get the podcast first, bonus content, video on demand, tickets to live shows, prize draws, loads more stuff. Honestly, I can't tell you how much it would mean to us if you did that. We're trying to rebuild Northeast comedy after the pandemic, but also make it a genuine hotbed of comedy in this country. We're already getting there. What we want is to have a place where comedians can stay and make a living without having to be away from home all the time or move to London or Manchester. And we're getting there, and we want you to do that with us. We're going to give you loads of stuff, but ultimately we want it to be a club where comedians and comedy fans sort of work together for the same goal. We'll give you loads of things, but also get a membership card and a secret handshaking password. So I'm going to think the first half of the password now, and the Patreons will already be replying with the reply that you won't even know yet if you haven't got that. So I'm going to think it now. Yeah, yeah, I know, right? So yeah, that's from only £3 a month. You get more the more you put in, obviously. £5 a month, you get early podcasts and lots of, and you get access to Nowtflix, which is our video on demand service with a genuinely incredible array of stand-up shows from comedians from the northeast of England. But thank you for listening. After the break, I'll be talking to little Catherine Scott about diabetes. Hello, everybody. I'm here with, would you say, polymath Catherine Scott, in that you do loads of stuff, right?
Yeah, I would say I'm a polymath. That's a fancy way to say I'm not really sure what I'm best at, so I do it all.
Well, polymath suggests
yeah, brilliant at everything, but we'll just go with that.
Yeah, I'm not brilliant at anything, really. I'm fairly good at most things, but not brilliant, I would say.
So you're more a jack of all trades rather than a polymath.
Yes, although, definitely.
Apparently, the rest of the saying of that suggests that a jack of all trades is actually better to be than just a master of one, but people ignore the rest of it.
Well, I think in our current climate where industries just disappear, I think I've sort of always just fallen into stuff, really.
Yeah, and then think about people who used to work in hole punchers, and they were just the experts at hole punchers. And that's not a good example because we do still have hole punchers, but something like hole punchers, but worse. You know what I mean? That computer paper with the holes down the side. If they're like, oh, I've really specialised in making that computer paper with a hole down the side. I'm the best in the world at it. Well, where are you now, Mr. Cannon?
Just destitute. He's just destitute, Lee. Because the industry went of hole punching holes in paper.
Where is you? You're a 4 out of 10 at everything.
Exactly.
There's always a place for that.
Exactly. There's people that are better at it, and there's people that are worse at it, and that's me.
But I'll tell you what you are good at, Catherine. The best at. Sideways from the many things you do in the entertainment industry and related fields. But you're good at them. But what you're best at is diabetes.
I am. I wouldn't say I'm best at it. I had to ring my diabetes team for some advice last week. And considering I've had it since 1990, you would think I would know what I was doing. But
there's a few things I already want to talk about then.
Go on.
I'm interviewing you from a position of ignorance, right?
Yeah.
And it's not pretend the ignorance, right? It's it for the sake of a podcast. It's here's what I know about diabetes. There's two types. Right? One and two.
Apparently there's 17. Did you know that?
What?
Yeah, I was surprised at that, but carry on. So, but yeah, generally the high profile thing is that there's two, type one and type two.
Types?
There's gestational diabetes. That's the only other one I know.
So there's three types of diabetes, right? Gestational, one and two.
Yeah.
You are a one.
I am. I'm the one.
You are a wanna.
I am a wanna.
I was going to say that's the one, as far as I know, that you're born with, but you didn't have it until 1990 and you were not born in 1990.
No, it's one that you're, how to say it politely. Basically, it's not the one that's impacted by lifestyle. So I haven't got diabetes because I was a pure chunker at seven, because I wasn't.
That's God's words, not mine. Because I was.
Well, it's like in the olden days, they used to call type 2 mature onset because older people used to get it basically in the same way that older people get a lot of things as they age, as your body naturally deteriorates, your pancreas used to be one of the things that would deteriorate. But then because children, I guess, in some areas of the world are getting heavier and are putting more pressure on all their organs, pancreas included, there's a lot of children that get type 2. And that's related to lifestyle, but also like now type 2 is kind of just for anybody of any age. Now it can affect, and actually after COVID-19 they realized that there was a spike in diagnosis for type 1s, because for some people they reckon type 1 can be brought on by a virus that attacks your body, not a specific virus I don't think, but just generally if your body's like under attack from something and it can just be brought on, and they think maybe that's what happened to me.
Okay, so we'll get on to how yours happened soon, but first I want to talk about diabetes, right? Here's what I know about it. So do we just know the starting point of my ignorance? There is, I now know, 2, 3, or 17 types. Diabetes means you have to have lots of insulin, which is medicine, and you have to inject it into various parts. I've seen you do lots of injections and I am not comfortable with it. Also, diabetes, from what I gather, is something where you're not allowed any sugar, apart from sometimes you suddenly need loads. I know this because once a lass in my school had diabetes, which probably still does.
Unless it's probably cute, I just want
to. I went to Oxford University, so I'm just saying you can still do good stuff, Catherine.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
I had diabetes and then sort of collapsed or something, and one of the dinner ladies stuck a drifter in her mouth. Is that recommended advice?
It's not now, but it was then. Like,
so she's doing the right thing as far as she knew.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, well. Definitely. Oh, definitely, yeah. The only reason I say Drifter, maybe not, is because they don't recommend chocolate, unfortunately, anymore, because chocolate's really fatty and it just takes that bit longer to get into your system.
So what would you chocolate? Like a lolly sugar. Or something?
Just sugar. Just sugar, 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 sugar. Pure sugar, yeah. That's what I've started to just use.
Whoa, hang on. So have you done that? Just chuck some sugar in your mouth?
Yeah, I did that today.
What for?
Because my sugar levels dropped and it's just the quickest thing, because it used to be Lucozade. You were always told Lucozade, but they've changed the recipe because of the sugar tax, so that they don't pay like whatever it is. Like the government obviously thinking that they're doing the right thing by bringing in the sugar tax for diabetics everywhere. It's totally messed us up. So the advice from our from my specialist team is say no to Lucozade. Specifically, during like a consultation, they've gone, and you know about Lucozade.
I'm worried about Lucozade as a company. Like, how are they going to compete? Like, I know Lucozade isn't the medicine, but it's
no. But everyone has Lucozade when they're ill, aren't they? Like, everyone has
diabetics and vaguely poorly children. That's what it's for, isn't it?
Yep, exactly. Oh, I mean, you can still. Well, that's the thing. Like, I'm not. Red Bull's the only thing I've ever been told don't have. Well, it says on the side, not recommended for diabetics.
Why? Like too intense.
So it's got so much sugar in it.
More
so
sugar much. Than sugar.
Like it's I think if you drink the full can, it's like hella sugary. And like I guess because you generally have Red Bull like with vodka and things like that. Like so I guess the assumption is that maybe the diabetic will be so drunk they won't know. Not that you only have to have Red Bull when you're drunk. You can have Red Bull whenever you want. I'm not your boss. Like have it whenever you
just drink it as pop now, don't they?
Yeah. And I don't know whether like the caffeine and stuff in it has, I don't think caffeine doesn't have an impact on diabetes, but I'm wondering whether, because adrenaline stops insulin from working. So I wonder whether caffeine has like, helps your body absorb more sugar or something. I don't know. Anyway, on the side of the can, it always used to, I don't know whether it still does now, but Red Bull always used to say not recommended for diabetics or children.
And it says it gives you wings, so I don't believe everything they say.
Yeah.
I think maybe the bonus episode of this for patrons only, you should have a can of Red Bull and we'll see what happens.
I'd rather not, Lee, because I like being alive. I'm just
that's a good question then. So you're a diabetic, type 1 diabetic, right?
Yeah.
If you just had no insulin, you're like, I'm not having this anymore, or there was a Brexit or something, and then you couldn't have any more insulin, and you just were eating, not my diet because that's too extreme, eating a relatively normal diet, mm-hmm. What happens?
Eventually, I would die, probably after about 3 days, maybe.
Well, that's not many days at all, that.
No, I mean, I don't know for sure, because I've never tried it. But I did when I was a kid, when I was about 12. I went through a rebellion of not wanting to have it anymore, because I'd had it since I was 7. And I guess I just thought, like, when you're 7, and because I'd had such a dangerous, because I'd nearly died anyway, I think I'd spent a few years of just being like, 7, 8, 9, just being like, I'm a diabetic, that's all good. And then I hit 12 and it was like, oh, this is shit. Yeah, this is so shit. I have to inject then I was only injecting twice a day.
How many do you inject now?
Every time I eat. And then I also inject at 9 o'clock in the morning and 9 o'clock at night. And that's what they call your long acting insulin. So that kind of chills about in the background.
So does it get worse as life goes on?
No, it's just they changed. So I used to be on 2 injections a day, which doesn't really give you much. It doesn't give you any flexibility. So on those 2 injections a day, I used to have to have, right, strap in, because this is technical. So I used to have a specific amount of carbohydrate every day because of the insulin I was on. So I would have 30 grams for my breakfast, which is about 2 slices of toast or a bowl of cereal. I would have a 10 gram snack, an apple or a biscuit. I would have 50 grams for my lunch, which is like a sandwich, some crisps, maybe a chocolate biscuit, probably a yogurt, a snack at 3:30, 10, 15 grams, which again, like apple or whatever. But what teenager wants an apple? You know what I mean?
I never eat them. I will always eat chocolate, but every time I have an apple, I'm like, this is actually
apples are good, yeah. For my evening meal, it would be 50 grams. And then for me supper, it would be 30 grams. So that's like a lot to eat in a day. To the point where I think I was still in primary school.
A lot to eat in a day.
Well, it's just, I don't know, because you have to get it right. You have to get the portion size right. So I do it now. Like the way I was trained is when you look at something like potatoes, pasta, like the carb, like the long-term carb, like the slow-release carbohydrates, you need to imagine that they are egg size, because an egg size thing of mashed potato is about 10 grams. So that's how you, when I look at a plate of food, I have to work out how much carbohydrates on that plate. And now I just inject for what I eat. But the problem is sometimes it's not all I really want to eat. So especially if I'm not like fancy a pudding. So I'll have injected for me tea and then I'll be like, oh, just really fancy like some cake. So then I'll have the cake, but then I've already got insulin in my system. And then I'll have the cake, which is quite fatty maybe and takes a little bit longer to get into my system. And then I'll have insulin. And then all of a sudden the insulin just hits and my sugar levels just...
Right, just okay. Pop. So what does it feel like when that happens? Is it a mental thing or a can you feel it in your brain?
Yeah, it's a physical thing more than anything else. So at first I start to feel a little bit, just a bit off, like just not quite aware. Like I'm hyper aware of certain things, but other things are fuzzy. So my eyes... like I can focus on a thing, but then around the rest of it, it's all quite fuzzy. And I feel a little bit, I imagine, I've never taken drugs, but I imagine it's what it's like to be a bit on a bit of a trip, because you like can hear stuff, but you can't process it properly. Cause you, people think it's like having a fit and it's the opposite of that, because you get really tired and you're like, so some of the symptoms are like sweaty. Like you get like, especially if I've done like a really, if it's a big drop, suddenly I'll get like cold sweats and clammy hands. And sometimes because my adrenaline kicks in, if I'm out and about and I'm worried, then that is on top of your hypo as well. So sometimes I feel shaky. Sometimes I feel really, really hungry. Like I need to eat now, like not hangry, like beyond hangry. Like, you know, I would like kill someone to like eat like a, I don't know, a burger. But when I'm high, like high has a similar, like has some similarities to being low. So if you don't have really good hypo awareness.
Is high equally as dangerous?
Yeah. High is dangerous, but over a longer period of time. So you could go into a diabetic coma from being low within a few hours if you don't do anything about it. If you're consistently high over a week, like consistently, so it's going up and up and up, then that can kill you as well.
Okay. So coma, right?
Yeah.
Is that... because obviously coma is a phrase that is loaded with meaning, because people go, oh my, I was going to do a sarcastic
coma, sugar coma, say, oh, yeah.
My son is in a coma, but well, that actually would be really sad. You know, is a diabetic coma a coma as we would recognise it?
Yeah, so they found out I had diabetes when I was 7 and I was on holiday in Skegness with my family, and I collapsed on a miniature golf course. It sounds like the setup to a joke, and
they
did
just assume it was the excitement of being in Skegness.
I was just like, ah, this is too much. And I collapsed. And so obviously my parents called 999. And because the symptoms of diabetes are so similar to lots of other things, so the symptoms of a non-diagnosed diabetic is thirst, like extreme thirst, going to the toilet a lot because of the thirst, losing a lot of weight, and irritability. It could be anything, and I was 7, so they put it down to, you know, a teacher I had at primary school wasn't particularly nice. I'd had a new cousin that had been born. They weren't sure whether I was, like, you know, feeling a bit pushed out because of that, and, you know...
It makes sense, because you are spoiled.
I am, massively, yeah. Even though, like, I'm not an only one, like, I am, yeah. There's a lot of love and admiration in my family, adoration. So they didn't, my mum and dad had no idea, and actually the doctors didn't either, and because by the time I'd collapsed, most of my organs were going into organ failure, So my lungs in particular were really bad, and actually that holiday I had quite laboured breathing, so the doctors just thought it was asthma, so they put me on a nebulizer, and I was trying to pull it off in the ambulance. And then they rushed me into hospital. And by then I was in a coma. I had lost consciousness, and I hadn't, like, I do have recollection of that time, but it's more, it sounds so bizarre to say, but it felt like an out of body experience. Like I have amnesia for about 2 weeks. So I was in the coma, and the doctors didn't know what was the matter. And it was so fluky that they tested this for diabetes. There was a German specialist who was over in Boston General Hospital, and she heard about us in the canteen, and she just said, check our sugar levels, see what they are. And they were 46, and you tend to die when they're 50. Yours will be between 4 and 7. So that gives you a sense of the scale. So they tested my sugar levels and realized it was diabetes, put me on insulin straight away. And like I regained consciousness like within a day or so.
I suspect mine's slightly higher than 7, everyone.
Honestly, it won't be. If you ate a chocolate bar now, your pancreas would deal with it. The only cases of people who have very high sugar levels and are not diabetic are mountaineers who've got stuck. And all they've got with
the cake.
Yeah,
that's why they have that, isn't it?
Exactly. But only if you're stuck on a mountain in the lakes.
Yeah, because of joy. Do you carry a bit of Kendall? That would be better than sugar for you.
Probably would.
Kendall mint cake.
But I wouldn't. But the annoying thing about sugar and anything sweet is you take it to solve your hypo, and then you shoot up again. Like your sugar levels rocket again. So then what I have to try and do is to resist the temptation to have insulin again to bring it back down, because I hate feeling high. Like it's I'm really dehydrated.
Does that feel worse than the other way?
Sometimes yes, sometimes yeah, it does. Like if I've if it's been like over a couple of hours and you're just like, oh, just feel really fuzzy around the edges. The thing about the hypo is like you can't drive if you're having a hypo, and you can't. Like it impairs you more, I think, than being high.
How often does that happen?
Me having a hypo? God, daily.
Okay.
Because nobody's day is the same. So like I might think I'm gonna just be around the house all day. And then it might be like, oh, actually, I need to pop to the shops and I can't be bothered to take the car, so I'll walk. And the shop is like less than a mile away, but maybe I was just on the cusp. Maybe I was about 5. So I was normal, but by going for a walk, it's then plummeted my sugar levels. So then I've got to like also buy sweets, which is no bad thing, but like I think if I added up how much money I spend on sweets, it would probably be about the same size as like my insurance for the car. Like I spend so much money, and it always happens at the most inopportune times. Having a hypo, like it's just the worst, always. Even if I'm prepared for it and I think probably gonna have one now, like I'll try and have preemptive sugar. Sometimes the sugar just doesn't get in my system fast enough.
So a couple of questions.
Yeah.
One of them's pretty bleak.
Is it going to kill it?
it's I'm sending it your way with a lot of sugar. Before you first found out you had it, you very nearly died,
mm-hmm.
right? Have you come that close again? And secondly, it was 1990 mm-hmm. that you were diagnosed. How long before that would what you've got have just been an automatic death sentence?
So they discovered insulin, I think maybe it was in Canada. I think it was like maybe the turn of the 20th century.
That's probably because of all the maple syrup.
What it is. Yeah. And there's a great account of it when they found insulin, because they knew what had caused it, but they couldn't manufacture insulin, and they used to use it from pigs. They used to develop it like from pigs. And there was all these kids who had diabetes in comas, and they gave them insulin and they all like woke up as if they were like Sleeping Beauty or something. So not that long ago, like kind of within 100 years, I guess I would have died if I'd had it. But even when they started to administer insulin, like really what's come on is the technology to test your sugar levels, because up until I think maybe the 50s, maybe even the 60s or 70s, you just used to use your whey. They would boil whey, and then they would stick a stick into it and figure out like how high they were. But obviously, like your body processes urine as a byproduct of food, so it's not like you eat something and then piss and then immediately test it and it's accurate. Yeah, so okay. It's like it might show that you were high like 4 hours ago, but that's not really that useful. So I guess in terms of like having a normal life, it's probably only been since like the 80s, maybe, since diabetics could like, you know,
you're basically very early in, really. It seems trite to say lucky, but relatively lucky.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying that with like not much expertise on the history of diabetes. You think I would know, but I can't.
Well, you've got a diabetes team there helping you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess like they know they're amazing. Like my consultant, like she speaks at like worldwide conferences and stuff, because it's such an interesting area, because I don't know all of the technical words, but one of the reasons why they think one of the reasons that they invest so much in the research of like what causes diabetes is they reckon they could potentially like manufacture insulin like that's specific for you. So it's not just a general insulin that like lots of diabetics have and it works really well for some and it doesn't work so well for others, but like it's the best on the market. They reckon they could like manufacture it for you. I wouldn't say your DNA, but essentially that's what they're working towards. Yeah, yeah, I would love it if they could work towards a cure, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Is that not looking like anything that is close?
No, I don't think so. I think when I was first diagnosed, they said to me, "Mom, like, you know, a cure is just around the corner, but like it's 32 years this year for me. And like, that's a kind of long corner." Yeah. So I used to be very, very cynical and used to think that, well, like, where's the incentive to find a cure? Like, I cost the NHS about 400 quid a month to keep me alive. Like, if you're a drug company, are you going to...
I've always had this thing about drug companies, you know, when people go, mm-hmm. oh, they're keeping down cancer cures or anything. And I think that that relies on the assumption that there's one big thing that is
medicine
or drug companies, but actually for the individual company who did discover cures for all cancer, they'd be brilliantly off. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
yeah, and I think... as I've got older and my bitterness has subsided slightly, I think I've kind of come to the realization that you also like in scientists and researchers are essentially good people. Like they go into that field because they want to make life better. And even in my diagnosis, I mean, I have my little Libra that's on my arm. I can't show you, it's a podcast anyway, but it's basically the size of like...
Explain what a Libra is.
So a Libra is what they call a constant glucose monitor. So it sticks in under the skin on my arm and it constantly monitors my sugar levels. So if I go high, my phone goes, and if I go low, my phone goes, because I have an app on my phone. And when I because obviously through COVID times you can't always see a consultant, but they can access my sugar levels all the time. So when I'm on the phone to them, they can just log into the account and see what my sugar levels have been doing, and it gives you like a graph and a reading. And It's a little bit delayed from if I just did like a finger prick test, because it measures it measures the blood in your skin rather than your actual blood, if that makes sense. So the doctors are always like, it's great, but don't forget to test your sugar levels as well. And it's like, you know, it's one of the best things. It's one of the best technological advances in diabetes. I'm not on the pump. I'm not on the insulin pump. If I was diagnosed as a child now, they would put you straight on the pump because you can rather than injecting like I do, it's attached to you all the time. And you, it's about the size of like kind of an old Nokia phone, you know, like the 3210.
Why are you not on it? Just because they used to not be in?
Yeah. So it will not surprise you to know this, Lee, but I have very strong opinions about certain things. And when I was
a very difficult person,
I was offered it about god maybe 10 years ago when it was just coming on the market. And the idea of having something attached to us permanently I just didn't want to know. And my sugar levels weren't particularly badly controlled at the time, so there wasn't a need for it. But now I kind of think it wouldn't be that bad. Like, I've got the Libra attached to us all the time. I mean, it's dead discreet. Although I'm quite proud because, like, on my wedding pictures, you can see it. And my photographer was like, do you want us to... because I'd said, Omar, can you erase that out? And then he was like, do you still want us to? And I said, no, actually, I don't, because I am a diabetic, so...
Yeah, why pretend? It's not...
Exactly. And I was doing a gig for Felton Out in... it was in Sunderland, and I was on stage with a t-shirt and you could clearly see it. And I'd mentioned I was diabetic, and one of the lasses in the audience wooed, and she was like, I've got a Libra. I was like, brilliant.
Yeah, it sounds trite, but that sort of representation is important, isn't it? Most people would cover it up, but why?
But it's funny because, like, I love Strictly Come Dancing, and like one of the dancers, Nikita, he's got one, and I only noticed it when he like ripped his shirt off during like his like last dance. And I immediately went online, is Nikita diabetic? And it was like a full forum chat about...
You fancy him a bit more.
Yeah. Although if two diabetics have children, those kids are definitely going to have diabetes.
Well, I tell you what, we're about to wrap this up, but for a bonus episode, let's talk about that in a bit. So first off, so we're going to go into that very soon. But first off, what you didn't answer is, have you come as close to dying since? And there's a lot of ghouls out there listening to podcasts who would absolutely want to know.
Yes, I lost consciousness when I was very small, so I hadn't had it. I hadn't had it very long, and I was at home, and I was like, so I was still only seven, maybe heading towards eight, and I think I'd just woken up, and my sugar levels were quite low, and I don't think I'd noticed very well, and I remember it must have been winter time because I had those really woolly tights that only 80s kids and early 90s kids know, and I had them on, and I remember coming round, and my mum had his like in our arms, and she was shoveling sugar in my mouth. And I'd obviously like spat some of it out because it was like really sticky on me tights. And I remember coming round to that, and that was pretty sketchy.
It's weird because these days you'll often spit something out and it's sticky on your tights, but you don't seem to mind. Oh, we're doing so well.
Oh, mate.
Three diabetics can have sex too.
Really can, yeah. I mean, sometimes it makes us have a hypo, but yeah, we can. Ooh, you can't orgasm when you're having a hypo.
With a hypo, isn't it, in a way.
But no, you can't really orgasm when you're having a hypo.
Oh God.
Yeah.
So do men ever have hypos on purpose to delay orgasm? It's a good question, isn't it?
I don't know, but like apparently, so we used to get this thing called the Balance magazine, which was like from Diabetes UK, or like, yeah, it was like a club basically for diabetics, in like an advice magazine, and it used to have loads of adverts for men who had erectile dysfunction because it's a massive side effect for men, apparently. Is, yeah. I don't know whether it's just for the type 2s or whether it's like for anyone who's got diabetes, so yeah.
Probably do, don't
I? Bad times, right, yeah.
So, thank you, Catherine. We'll go into the bonus episode now, which people can listen to if they want, but I'll plug that at the start and end of this. You don't need to be here for that. I was just thinking, do they still make drifters?
Yeah, they do.
I'm going to have a drifter because I can just have chocolate whenever I want.
You can. So can I. I just have to inject for it.
Well, what I have to do is exercise every time I have some, and I don't.
That was a Feltnout production. To find out more, visit feltnout.co.uk.